Today, I am lucky enough to talk with a very smart analyst, the Senior Data and Insights Analyst for the University of Oxford, no less. Hugh Hallam joined me to discuss all different aspects about getting into analytics as a nonprofit, what you can look for, some pitfalls you can avoid. And what I loved about this conversation is while Hugh is very smart and very talented, we talked a lot about how everyone can get into this. You don't have to necessarily be a brilliant analyst at Oxford to be able to do these things. You can get started in smaller ways. You can get started with easier tools. So this is a great conversation to kind of explore what does analysis in nonprofits possibly look like for you. Just wanted to share a quick reminder about our free virtual data summit happening at the end of this month, end of September. And it's free to register. It's an afternoon filled with 8 other expert speakers that are joining me to walk through how we really can measure what matters as nonprofits. 15-minute talks packed with action tips you can take right now to move your data and analytics forward in nonprofits. It's especially designed for small to medium nonprofits. Getting started with analytics, the registration link is in the show notes and in this description for this episode, so please go ahead and check that out. And without further ado, I want to bring on my interview with Hugh. I do apologize. I had a few issues with my audio capture, so a few words kind of got dropped, but the conversation is so great, I know I wanted to share it with you anyway. So let's get started. Hello, and welcome to Heart, Soul, and Data, the podcast where we explore the human side of analytics to amplify the impact of nonprofits everywhere. With me, your host, Alexandra Mannerings. I am very excited to be joined today from Oxford University in England. So Hugh Hallam, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Thanks. I'm really thrilled to be here with you today as well. So I am working in the development office at Oxford University. I'm part of what's called the marketing and insights team. So I lead up a lot of the insights work that we do in the development office. Our team has a whole range of roles, actually. We sort of cover all of the mass fundraising that Oxford University does. So we do a lot of the mass communications. We cover insights for the whole of the office, also some of the insights work that's done for all of the colleges that are associated with Oxford University as well. And then we also look after the web and digital. So we're looking after that side of user experience as well. There are quite a few things we do. My role's pretty varied that, and I've done things from preparing for GDPR to chairing our data governance and stewardship group, all sorts of things. And I lead on a lot of the reports that we develop internally as well.
I want to start with a question, since a lot of the listeners here are newer to the analytics space, especially in nonprofits. I was curious, from your point of view, how do you define data and analytics? What does that mean to you?
Sure. I mean, data is kind of information, but it's a little more than that. It's kind of information meets some kind of systematizing. You've got to have something standardized across that information to make it actually readable and usable in different ways. And then analytics, for me, is frequently about patterns, finding patterns in that data, finding points of comparison that can allow you to understand something about it that can help you to make a decision. So that's sort of how I see analytics. Analytics is pattern recognition often.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I think it helps to kind of break down that I think when people hear data or analytics, they think, Google size machinery and, all of this complexity that is there. But really, like you said, it's information that you can keep in a systemized way so you can access it repeatedly and in the same way every time, right? It can't be constantly changing in between when you're getting to it. And that the analytics is taking that information, finding patterns that inform you. And you mentioned sort of 3 different ways you can approach analytics, right? The systematized, repeated, standardized reporting. And then you had sort of these ad hoc questions. I need to know X, can we find that? And then you mentioned this idea of sort of more open-ended research, that exploration. And I think of it, in science, that we do have these kind of basic science questions where we're not necessarily sure where they're going to lead, but it helps us kind of explore and understand. For nonprofits just getting started in this space, that might seem kind of overwhelming, right? Like, where would I even start? What part should I start thinking about? How should I start to even take that first step towards having analytics as part of my organization? So do you have a recommendation of a good place to start?
If you're in the nonprofit space, start exploring your audience and find out what you can about them. What does your data tell you about similar kinds of behavior that they're making? Explore what commonalities you can find between them. Are there certain patterns of giving that they're making? Are you finding that you have some donors who give, for example, every year, or some donors who give less frequently, more frequently, like that? How can you start to recognize these different trends and group them together and start to understand them as distinct groups? So, yeah, that would be my first thing. Go through what you have already. What is the information that you've been collecting? And then start to think about, well, how can I put these pieces of data together to potentially find some kind of pattern in the behavior of these people I'm engaging with? So that's probably where I would start.
Mm-hmm. And as you said, that then that sort of more basic foundation of who am I working with? Who's my audience? Then you can take that and start to formulate some more specific questions. So when you find out, oh, that's interesting, local people tend to be more consistent donors than visitors, you can build on that question of, well, let's find out, like, what is it about locals that we're really attracting? Or why is it we're missing out on visitors or whatever that might be, and dive a little bit more deeply into that.
Yeah, exactly. And you want to find out what the kind of relationship you have is to these people and what the different kinds of relationships you have with different people. One of the projects I was involved in early on involved some engagement behavior scoring. So I was looking at how people had engaged with e-coms we had been sending out through the university, how they've been engaging with events, being engaging on a philanthropic level as well. And I ended up creating scores for all of these different areas of activity. Now, there was a moment where it was quite complicated doing this, and I wasn't sure how to proceed with this scoring around the e-coms, because I was looking at how many emails people had been receiving, how many they'd opening, how many they'd been clicking on, all of these things. And I had this kind of line of different variables I was looking at. And I just thought, how on earth do I turn this into a simple score and say, well, this person's clearly more engaged with us than that person over there. And I just toyed around with the maths. I did some research online. I looked to see if I could find a sort of standard formula that was being used throughout the sector that I could borrow, find anything. So I just thought, well, okay, well, what if I add this and this, and then I divide it by X and so forth. And I made this little formula, which was just my own little creation. But what I did was I then went, okay, let's look at some individuals who have just been scored here and look at what their actual engagement is, those variables, and let's just think about it and think, does that person seem more engaged than the other person? So you just kind of sense check it by looking back at those people. You think about what their subjective experience might be, and does your scoring seem to correlate with what seems pretty sensible? And you have to do that a fair bit, because you'll find, or at least I found, that you've got some people who just appear to be much more engaged according to your score than they seem to be when you actually look at the reality of their situation. But you just keep tweaking, and eventually you get to a point where the people do seem to line up. And when you sense check it, and when you get somebody else to sense check it with you, it does seem that, yes, that person would appear to have a stronger relationship than that person. So I guess what I'm saying is experiment as well. Scoring is incredibly helpful for determining these differences in relationship, but you have to look at the data. You have to think through what that data might mean for the person that it relates to. And then, yeah, do that assessment. Is this kind of scoring relevant? Is this working for me?
I love that example. And I think it captures so many important pieces of analytics, one of which is this idea that it's not that we as humans are blind and have no idea what's going on unless we bring numbers into it, right? Like I feel like a lot of times people go, well, if we need analytics, that somehow means like I don't know enough or I don't understand what I'm doing. And in fact, you're saying quite the opposite, is you're saying, well, no, when we create an analytic, we have to make sure that it aligns with what we really do know about the world, right? When I'm engaging with a volunteer or a donor, I know how engaged they are because I'm seeing the way that they're interacting with me. I'm seeing the way they're interacting with the organization. And the idea with building that out of the data is what you can witness one-on-one. If you can get that to be reflected in an analysis on the data, now you can do that on every single donor, right? And you might not be able to talk to every single donor, but the analysis can span literally everyone in your database.
Exactly. And the most valuable thing is to have those conversations with, if you're working in a team where you're an analyst and you have other people who are face-to-face fundraisers, the valuable thing you can do is talk to those face-to-face and just stack up. Does my analysis stack up? Does my scoring, do these categorizations stack up with your experience? And hopefully what you get is that kind of light bulb moment from them where they say, yes, and you've helped us clarify the difference. That's what you're really looking for. But it's also valuable if they say, no, sorry, I don't think it does stack up. What about this and this? Because as you just said, Alexandra, they know those relationships, experience.
Yeah, and so you sort of identified a great place to start and then pitfalls we can be paying attention to, one of which is creating something that doesn't actually align with reality. Another is not doing that conversation between the frontline people and anyone who is doing your analytics, right? They're often in different teams or at least in different spaces in the teams, and they may not always talk to each other. Are there other pitfalls that organizations getting started with analytics should be paying attention to?
Oh, goodness. There are challenges. I'm not going to pretend there aren't. One of the common things that happens is that, I mean, if you're getting started with analytics, usually it's because there's been some kind of cultural change within the organization or a leadership change, something like that. And so you will inherit data, and sometimes you just won't have the keys to that data. You won't source of some of it is, or you won't know exactly how to interpret it. And that is very, very challenging and takes a lot of care. And usually it involves some trial and unfortunately some errors where you realize that a data you had cannot quite be trusted in the way that you maybe could be. And then there's quite a lot of work to sort of pick what will be used within that data set. So yes, there'd be pitfalls, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point of how easy it is to misunderstand something that a data set is telling you. You know, we have misunderstandings as humans where I say one thing and you hear it a different way than I was intending. And I feel like data sets do the same thing where they present something and we have to interpret what that data set is presenting. And sometimes, especially if we don't have a long history with the data, we might miss it. And I've certainly been in an experience with organizations where we have had to just dump past data and go, it would be great if we could use 10 years worth of data, but we just can't because either data quality issues, or like you said, sometimes we just don't know what a particular field meant or how it was collected. And so we can't trust what's in it. And I always think about the phrase of the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, but the time is now, right? And so if you're in that position, it can be a bit disheartening, but you know that if you start that now, you start that data collection, you start the good documentation, you start your standardizations of practices now, in a year, in 2 years, you'll then have the value of that data that you can trust, that you know, that you have the documentation to understand what it means. So sometimes it is a bit of an investment in the future self.
It definitely is. And I think an investment is a really good way of thinking about it, because what you also have to do is enough planning to be confident that you or somebody else working in your position in 2 years down the line is not going to do a U-turn on what you've tried to set up because they've realized that there's a much better way to do it. Sure, in our work, we have to recognize that sometimes we do make mistakes, and sometimes later down the track, we do discover that there are better ways to approach things than what we realized at first. But yes, when you're planting that tree, when you're starting out that new system, you do have to try to future-proof it as much as possible.
Right. Take a guess of what kind of harvest you need from it. Make your best guess, because you have to decide what kind of tree to plant.
Exactly.
I think sometimes that does lead people to that every kind of tree. Well, I'll just collect all of the data in all of the ways, but that's not really possible. So you bring up a good point of having that real strategic intention first of what do I need to answer the questions over the next year, next 2 years, next 10 years, so that I can put those systems in place now to make sure that I'm collecting and caring for the data that will answer those questions that we need strategically.
Definitely.
You may not know the answer to this because I don't know how long this happened at the university, but was analytics always a part of development and marketing, or was there a point, like you said, that there was sort of this culture shift to bring it in?
I mean, there was a culture shift recently. My team was created 4 or 5 years ago, and as the marketing and insights team. So there was a definite decision at that point to introduce an insights component in what we were doing. We already had a research team, which was doing prospect research, which has continued doing prospect research as well. So that's certainly not new to a team. But this kind of advanced analytics for business purposes, for behavioral analysis, is indeed quite new. I would say that we've had strong data skills within the broader team, probably. I how long that goes back, but there has definitely been a culture led to a desire for more reporting, more data visualizations, dashboard creation, more behavioral analysis as well.
What do you think drove that change?
I think this sense that there's so much more that we could do with our data, that there's so much more we could do to understand our donor body, our alumni body as well, the people we're engaging with, and that we were doing an incredible job of major gift fundraising and all of the research at that top end of our of people with relationships with us, but that we were kind of leaving out nurturing the relationships with other donors and other supporters we had. So I think part of it was we recognized that there was a real need to better nurture the relationships we had and that analytics could help us to understand those relationships and move in that direction. I think that was part of it. I think there was a sense that times were changing, that the analytics sphere was developing, machine learning was becoming more prevalent, that we needed to simply advance our analytics to kind of keep up with what was going on in the sector more broadly. There was also a desire for more capacity to be able to drive business decision making through analytics as well.
I know that your team has a lot of skills, right? They've got you, who clearly are quite knowledgeable in this space. You talk about realizing how important analytics is, how important it is to have that information to drive those decisions. How does an organization go about thinking, you know, do I try to hire someone like you, or do I use a third-party vendor? Do I do both? I mean, do you have any advice for kind of navigating that? How do I actually get the skills to do these kinds of really cool analyses?
Yeah, it's really challenging, that question. I think a lot of charities are looking at that and just going, where do I get started? We often used consultants to help us get over certain hurdles with our data as well. What I would say is if you're working with a consultant, try to do it in a way where you make sure that it's also an investment in your own development, that you're going to learn from the consultant and that what you're going to gain from them is going to help you turn your own wheels where that, yeah, you'll be able to learn from it, that you'll be able to pick up from the analysis that the consultant has helped you with and keep forward. What you don't want is, I mean, sometimes this is necessary and sometimes it's helpful, but the less ideal option is to get a consultant to do a discrete piece of work and to treat that as something done that you do not need to engage with further, because then you don't learn from it. And when you need to advance on it in future years, you'll either need to go back to the same consultant or find somebody else who can then largely unpack what the consultant has done or start almost from a tabula rasa situation at that point. So what I would say, yes, work with consultants, make sure that you are planting that harvest in the right way, that you are making the right decisions about what kind of data to be collected, that data, how to systematize. Also, make sure that you are building your own resource within your team at the same time, and that the work the consultant is doing to help you get started, to help you move along, to help you get over whatever the hurdle is that you're facing, is something that you can then draw into team so that it becomes part of your knowledge and helps you to keep moving forward.
I think that's so critical. I think it is very tempting to say, I have problem X, I'm going to hire a consultant to solve problem X, and then done.
Exactly.
And we've talked a lot about throughout this how much of a journey, a never-ending journey, analytics is, and continues to grow, continues to develop. And you might hit those spots where you don't have that expertise, but to really think, how can I make sure that this continues to move me forward is an ongoing investment, right? That continues to give me value from that investment and isn't just a little box. And your point about if you ever want to come back and do it again, you know, you might hire someone to help do a survey on, you know, your students or your constituents. And then in 2 years, you need to update that. And if you haven't had the consultant train you and teach you how they did it or document exactly how it was done, back to our first problem of then how do you know what was actually in the data, what was actually collected? If all you have is the final result, it's going to be nearly impossible to replicate. And you got to start all over again. You can't then compare or trend over time. And so you really do lose out on that long-term insight.
Yeah, exactly. One of the challenges also, which I think is sector-wide, but it's certainly quite present in our institution and in higher ed, is that there's a lot of churn that goes on, a lot of people moving from position to position. And that can be challenging as well in terms of institutional memory. So it's almost like you have to build safeguards around that into your data collection processes as well. Make sure that you are taking the time out to document things and almost expecting that there will be different people engaging with this data in usually the not too distant future.
So true. And every time that you lose that piece of institutional knowledge, you have to take a step back. You're going to lose some ground in terms of understanding. And it's true for probably every position, as you said, and in every sector, but it is particularly important here where there is such a high turnover rate. And the documentation is just so key on that. I mean, do you have recommendations on documentation? Like, how do you do good documentation? Is that a mean question to ask? Answer that in 2 minutes instead of 2 hours that it'll actually take.
Documentation is so, so difficult, you know. I started using a program called Altera not long after I got started working in data. One of the things I was attracted to with Alteryx is that it has drag and drop interface. So you can see little analytic tools on a canvas. And my thinking at first was, well, this is going to be fantastic for unpicking all of the little analytic steps that I'm taking in manipulating my data and getting from database to report. Well, I quickly started making workflows that were highly complex, actually. So that didn't quite work out the way I'd been hoping. It had been trying to incorporate the text box and make sure it was well documented so that somebody else would be able to understand the steps that I was taking. But it's difficult. It's very difficult. I've more recently been using Python and the Jupyter Notebooks. One of the things I love about the Jupyter Notebooks is, again, that you can put text boxes in there and just really explain almost as if you're writing a Word document. Okay, this is what is happening here. This is what this next step is. This is why I'm dividing by 7 or whatever it is that you're doing. You can write comments in there for you to check up on later. Like, I'm not entirely sure that this is collecting this particular group of donors in the way I want it to. Check into this later. So you can do a lot of documentation en route. But I feel like with documentation, it's an ongoing battle to give yourself time to do what's needed whilst you're trying to get all of the analytics done. And I'm not going to pretend I've found the answer or the sweet spot. It really is a daily battle to work that out. But you have to invest time in it. It's just so important. If you don't, then your workflows become useless if you leave and somebody else has to run them. Or even to you, if a problem comes up, it can take so long to debug that problem if you haven't properly annotated your workflow. So there's documentation of all of the data categories that we have, databases, which takes a long time. We've got a team within the university that's working on that and a dedicated project at the moment. One thing I will say about that project is it's taking a lot longer and it's much harder work than we'd envisaged it would be, or certainly than I had envisaged. There's a lot to be done and you need to really make sure within your organization that you're able to dedicate resources to that work. And it is worth it because it means that you can then get the data quality that you need, that you can have more assurance that different fields within your database mean what you think they mean. You can go through the processes of how that data is to go onto your database and better understand that and change those processes. If you realize that actually you're getting data from three sources and it means something different to each source. So it's hugely important work, but there is no way of making it rapid work. I'll just say that.
I feel like it's often where we're so busy bailing out the boat, we don't stop to take the time to patch the hole that's filling the boat. Mm-hmm. And you're exactly right that you have to have this balance of how much time you invest in the documentation versus just getting the actual analytic work done. And I like that you spoke to those different levels of documentation as well, right? There's the project level documentation. Here's the thing I did. And I have to say that not only is it a kind investment to whoever will have your job next, but it also is an investment to you because I've had to come back to analysis as I did, 6 months ago. And I'm like, I don't remember what I did. And your boss is like, you did it though. So do it again. Like, why you don't remember what you did, to your point of, you have to make these decisions. You're making these tweaks based on feedback you're getting. And then you can't just always logically determine, why did I decide to use, this approach versus that approach? And so writing it right there saying, I did this because I like to sometimes think, I should take 15 minutes after I finish something once I've handed it in and we're good to go and explain it like I would to my mom or my dad. Here's what I did in this analysis, like write down and stick it on that so I can keep it. But so we have that project level analysis. Yeah. And then you have the source analysis and documentation, right? So where did their data come from? What's in it? I've found an unexpected benefit of not just helping the analysts with that documentation, but it helps the rest of your organization because all of a sudden they have a way of knowing what kind of information is available. The number of times someone said, I've never asked that because I didn't think we had it. It's like, well, yeah, we collected in this database. Did you not know? And now they know they can ask the analysts or the marketing team for that information. I think that that's critical. And yeah, it's not an easy process, but it is worth patching the hole so that you can eventually stop bailing out the boat.
Definitely.
So I feel like I could talk to you for hours. I really, really appreciate all of this insight on it. So maybe you can come back and we can chat again. And I know we're going to get to hear you at our data summit that's happening at the end of September. So very much looking forward to that as well. So thank you so much for your time. I want to be respectful of yours as well. I really appreciated this conversation.
You are so welcome, Alexandra. It's been such a pleasure talking with you. I mean, like you said, I could talk with you for hours as well.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure.
So that was my conversation with Hugh Hallam. If you'd like to connect with him on LinkedIn, you can find him. His name is H-U-W, Hugh, and his last name, Hallam, H-A-L-L-A-M. I hope you enjoyed our conversation as much as I did, and I'll catch you next week. We are bringing in a data manager from the Parkinson's Foundation for next week, and I'm very excited to talk with him too. Take care. You've been listening to Heart, Soul, and Data. This podcast is brought to you by Miraconous, an analytics, education, consulting, and data services company dedicated to helping nonprofits amplify their impact through data. Learn more at Miraconos.com, MERAKINOS.com.